Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is Promoting Healthier Choices, a deep dive into lower risk choices for adult alcohol, with special guests, Amber Wolfram and Faye Callahan. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello, and welcome to Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. I'm Holly Raffel, and as the Faculty Director of the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion, it is my privilege to bring you this podcast. This is Episode 9 of Season 3. Have you noticed something interesting happening with how we think about consuming alcohol? The numbers tell a compelling story. Data from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration shows that in Ohio, the share of adults who drink has been on the decline. It's a trend we're seeing nationwide, with millions of fewer adults reporting consuming alcohol compared to a decade ago. At the same time, the non-alcoholic beverage market, from zero-proof spirits to craft mocktails, is absolutely booming. And don't worry, we have the stats to support these claims in the show notes. With support from the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, the Center of Excellence created a new resource for all Ohioans. We're excited to introduce the Promoting Lower Risk Choices, an educational playbook on adult alcohol use. It's a guide designed to empower you with the tools and strategies to reduce alcohol-related issues and promote healthier choices in your own community. You can find it on our website at preventioncoe.ohio.gov under the Learn and Grow tab in the resource library. And of course, we'll link in the show notes so you have easy access. Today, we are so fortunate to be joined by two incredible guests who are at the heart of this project. They served on our Ohio Adult Lower Risk Drinking Advisory Committee, participated in our ECHO sessions, and were essential in the playbook development. They're here to share insights and talk about this critical topic. Let's get into the conversation. The playbook we're discussing today would have not been possible without the dedication of our Ohio Lower Risk Drinking Advisory Committee. They offered expertise, constructive feedback, and valuable resources at every stage of the playbook's development. And we're so lucky to have two members joining us today. First, we have Amber Wolfram, an adult prevention specialist at the Family Resource Center. Amber brings over 25 years of experience in behavioral health, and her insights were critical in shaping this resource. She spent her career promoting evidence-based prevention in Hancock County, and her hands-on knowledge was a guiding force for the playbook. Welcome to the show, Amber.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And we're also joined today by Faye Callahan, an agent supervisor for the State of Ohio Division of Liquor Control. Faye's 28 years in law enforcement give her a unique and valuable perspective. In her current role, she oversees investigations and training for liquor permit holders across the state. She's a crucial subject matter expert, especially on the topic of new alcohol products. Faye, thank you so much for being here and for all the work you put into this project.
Thank you so much for having me.
So part of what makes this show so special is hearing the human stories behind the important work. So to start, I'd love for you both to share a little bit about yourselves that goes beyond your official bios. Amber, maybe you can tell us a little bit about a specific part of your day that you find most rewarding or a personal detail that helps our listeners understand what draws you to this work.
I think a great example of that has been this week. We're in the middle of recovery month. We are in Suicide Prevention Awareness Week. And so I have been fortunate to participate with our sheriff's office, who kicked off a 5K for suicide awareness. We've been having programming all week throughout the community. I've done programming with older adults. And so it's just been an opportunity to get out and be in the community and see everything that we are collectively doing together, which is what I love about my job.
Absolutely. It's that community part and community prevention. Thank you for honoring the community and all that you do. Faye, what about you? Is there something you can tell us that goes a little deeper than what's on your bio?
So I absolutely love to teach and to mentor and grow other agents You know, one of the beautiful things about my line of work is that we are working with the liquor permit holders face to face. There's a lot of unique challenges that come into play for us to get them permitted or even investigations. So I think growing them and teaching, like I have had the privilege of having great mentors, you know, myself and my career. And also, to be quite honest, I get to see many very cool places. You know, often the agents do a little bit more now than me, but, you know, you see a lot of behind the scenes. You see families, you know, starting their businesses. You see, you know, various things, these stadiums, you know, behind the scenes. You get to see a lot of very interesting and unique places and meet people with all kinds of different backgrounds. That's been a great part of my career.
Faye, it sounds like you really have the community at the heart of the work you do as well. So let's shift gears now and talk about the bigger picture of alcohol consumption. As we mentioned earlier, recent data shows that Americans are consuming less alcohol, but it's still a significant part of our culture. A recent Gallup poll found that over half of Americans say they consume alcohol. And here in Ohio, about 20% of adults report binge drinking in the last month, with our state ranking in the top 25% nationally for the number of drinks consumed per binge. So while we're seeing a decline, there's clearly more to a story. Amber, let's start with you. Why do you think alcohol is so deeply embedded in American culture?
Well, I think it's a fact that alcohol is embedded in our human history. From the very beginning of recorded history, you see individuals writing about mead, whether in Africa or China or India, and wine and Greece and in Italy. And then, of course, with the colonization of America, we are a mix of all of those different cultures and those different backgrounds. And I mean, at one time, you have to remember it was safer to drink beer than it was to drink water due to the boiling process. So I think alcohol has just been woven into so much of the fabric of human history. And now we have advertising and promotion and things to go along with that. So it's a substance that is legal, that has been kind of a part of a lot of parts of history throughout our history.
So with it being so deeply ingrained in our culture, what factors do you think are driving the recent decline in consumption?
Well, I think Gen Z, to be honest, they're very health conscious. They're very what they call sober curious. They've seen, thankfully, maybe one benefit of reality TV has been what the downside of impairment looks like and what the downside of alcohol use can look like. And they want to see what it's like to experience their adolescent and their young adulthood without the alcohol. And I think it's pushed our culture a little bit to say, well, what does that look like for everyone else? And when you consider now with the access to the internet and we have science now at our fingertips. We can do our own research. We don't have to wait for something to come out to tell us something is good or something is bad. I think the wellness push has pushed the factor of alcohol use more to the side.
Thank you. Faye, I'm curious about your perspective in law enforcement and liquor control. What are you seeing trend-wise?
I see a lot of things. First of all, I cannot agree with Amber anymore with what she said. I think she was so spot on, starting all the way back to, you know, the United States being a melting pot, you know, and all the cultures, you know, coming here. And so I agree, it's been woven in. But I also think that alcohol is often associated with all the highs and the lows of anything in our, you know, in our country. So when you think of, you know, marriage, there's toasts. When you think of, you know, somebody had a rough day at work or a breakup, they're stopping at the bar on their way home, you know. So, I think sports events, you know, whether you're watching from home or you're somewhere, you know, it's part of the celebration. You know, you even see when you think of, you know, some of the teams that are celebrating in their locker rooms, right? And it's showing everybody popping bottles and all that. I think it's very ingrained in all the good and, you know, the difficult that, you know, as part of our nation, I guess, in everyday things. I also think as far as the, you know, reason why some of the consumption has decreased, I do agree, you know, there is most certainly a wave of health conscious, you know, with the internet and with all the, you know, the new studies and everything coming out. But I also think there's other factors such as, you know, the legalization of cannabis in many, many states, including Ohio, and the lack of regulation in hemp-based products, right, THC-related. So I think that some of those things, even if that plays into, well, if I have a hemp-based seltzer and there's no alcohol in it, then it's not as hard on my body as alcohol. So I think people are trying other things, you know, and that's lowering the drinking rate, if you will.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me to my next question, Faye. From where you stand, what are some of the biggest misunderstandings you encounter about alcohol use or its regulation?
This one hits a little close to home. But what I would have to say is, you know, I think a misconception is that abusing alcohol or alcohol misuse disorder and some of these other things will not affect you as an adult. If it hasn't already in your younger years, say, because either you're, you know, under the age of 18 and maybe you didn't grow up with it in your household with your parents, or because you weren't abusing it in college, you know, but all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, 30s, 40s, you know, you may have a family and that alcohol won't, I guess, or that you won't become high risk because you haven't been already. And I think that's a huge misconception. And quite honestly, you know, I've found that to be in my own family.
Amber, what about you from your perch? Thinking about all these trends, what do you see as the most common misconceptions about consuming alcohol among adults?
I can't agree with Faye more. Our goal in prevention is always to delay the onset of first use. The longer we can delay the onset, the brain gets the chance to develop even further. We know the brain's not done until 23, 24. So our focus in primary prevention is always try to delay the onset of first use. Now, as someone who works with older adults, and when I say older, I joined the 50 club this year. So I say 50 and older, but many statistics say 65 and older. We know that there is a risk for isolation. We know there is a risk for individuals living more on their own without having supports close by. And when that happens, we also know there's a risk of individuals falling into that whole use, misuse, abuse, addiction cycle quicker because they don't have all those other safeguards in place that maybe used to be there, going to a job, having to get the kids to school, you know, having those marked responsibilities that we see that it's like, well, what else am I doing today? And many of the events now socially have alcohol involved. When I was a kid in the 80s, you didn't see alcohol at the zoo or alcohol downtown, you know, out, what people walking around with it, having it at different events. And it's I've noticed as smoking has become less socially acceptable in public, it appears that alcohol is becoming more socially acceptable in public. So, it, you know, you get around, you live long enough, you see things change. So I think we want to make sure that we're not always focusing on the kiddos. Of course, kiddos are important, but as adults, once it becomes legal, there's that misconception of like, well, I'm now in the safe zone. And when it comes to a substance, there's always a need to be mindful and to be watchful of our use.
So it's interesting to me hearing both of your responses. There's a sort of undercurrent of ripple effects. So beyond the numbers and the common beliefs that you've discussed, let's talk about these ripple effects of excessive alcohol consumption. It's not just about the individual. Faye, from your vantage point in law enforcement, what are some of the wider community impacts you see?
The decline in working, the decline in families, family support systems. As Amber said, you know, even being social, it's, you know, after COVID, I think that affected some things where it was easier for people to just stay at home and isolate themselves. I mean, you once again hit the nail on the head there. You know, it's easy to just stay at home and drink. And then it's affecting, you know, are you going to get up and go to work? You know, how is this affecting your children? How's it affecting your relationships? And I think that ripple effect goes far beyond just consuming alcohol in the household. I think it affects people, communities.
Amber, what about from a prevention standpoint? What are some of the ripple effects on families and communities that you see in your work?
Well, when it comes to substance use any substances. You know, there's that concern about, oh, is it in your family history? Oh, then you need to worry. If it's not in your family history, oh, you're safe. And for preventionists, our main goal is to let people know that it can happen to anyone. And so, yes, genetics is a percentage of it. It's a small percentage of it. When it comes to use, it's more about learned coping mechanisms, learned coping habits. And in the end, the body doesn't care. The body doesn't care if you're using a substance like alcohol for celebration or commiseration. It doesn't care. The body still treats it the same. And so the learned traits that we get from the adults in our lives, whether that be parents or grandparents or our neighborhood or our community at large, those norms are what shape how we see the world and how we see alcohol use. And so from a prevention standpoint, the ripple effects when we have more readily available a product in more places, that how is the community responding and making sure that the norming behaviors are still that it is used in a lower risk manner. It is not accessible to kids. Kids, I'm 50, I could say kids, 21 and over only. How do we continue that regardless of what product is popular at the time, regardless of, you know, are we celebrating, commiserating? Are we getting those lower risk guidelines and available and out to the community so they know what they are?
I appreciate you both providing the historical backdrop and the current backdrop for what we're seeing in alcohol consumption. And I want to shift, you know, more to the idea or notion of this playbook. Amber, is both a prevention educator and a key member of the advisory committee for this playbook, why does this work to promote lower risk choices for adult alcohol use resonate so strongly with you? So what's your why for this?
Oh, my why? I started in prevention in 1980 as a Nancy Reagan Just Say No kid. I was her first class. I was in kindergarten. We started the Just Say No classes in our schools because we didn't have them. And then I get into the field, and I get into the field in 1999, and it's still about the kids. And I'm in the field 25 years later, and it's still predominantly about the kids. And that's wonderful. But the kids having a healthy and stable life are dependent on the greenhouse in which they live and the adults tending that greenhouse. So if we're not focusing on the adults, then we are missing a really key component in helping out the kids. So the playbook to me is a chance to get words, and words matter, wording matters, words in front of the adults about alcohol use and how important it is for us to be able to model behavior that we would like to see not only in our own children, but in our community. And that playbook, I mean, I've got to see the draft. I was a part of creating that draft, and the wording was so important, and the focus that it's everyone. It's the community. It's all of us that play a part. It can't just be the preventionists. It cannot just be liquor control. It cannot just be the businesses. It has to be everyone that's a part of making low risk and lower risk an opportunity for everyone to know about.
I really appreciate you just kind of digging into your own personal history and how it juxtaposes against prevention's history. Faye, what about you? What's your personal connection to this work? And what about this playbook makes you feel it's so important?
Well, I'm going to go deep here. So I had mentioned earlier, you know, that this playbook and the prevention itself resonates so deeply with me. So my mother was a professional. She was a nurse. She was an RN. She was married with two kids and had a wonderful home and life. Now, she didn't growing up, but she did as an adult. And she had to go away for school again when she was 41. And I was about, I think 11 maybe. And we never, like, during my time in my household growing up, we didn't have alcohol in the house. There was none of that. My parents weren't going out drinking, you know, maybe a wine cooler on, you know, an anniversary or something out and about, but we didn't ever see it. Well, she came home about 2 years later because she had to live away during that time, and everything changed. And I saw the dynamic of my family go south very quickly. And my mother started consuming at 41, and she passed at 50 years old. And the reason that I go into this is because I had just turned 21. I was in the military. She passed July of 2001, and then 9/11 happened. In the meantime, she hadn't been paying the bills at home. And so between July and 9/11, my dad lost our home. I have lived every good experience without her. So for me, this certainly hits very home. So now that I have a daughter, I just want her experience to be very different from mine. You know, I think my experience affected a lot of things. I mean, part of why I ended up in the military, you know, because I had to make a way. There was not the family at home saying, hey, let's focus on your education, right? Or, you know, again, celebrating all the highs and lows and missing those things. So I think for her, I want her experience to be different. And I recognize how easy it is for anybody who maybe didn't start off as an adult at high risk, how quickly that can change and how it can ripple and affect the family. So this playbook, my favorite part of it is where you have space, I think it's page 11, maybe 11 and 12, where there's space to really reflect on your own, you know, as you're filling it out. Because I think we all need that sometimes. We all need the mirror to go, wait a second, you know, I've been so stressed out lately. I've had all these different things going on. Oh, I didn't recognize that now I'm not consuming 2 days a week. It's 5 days a week or all these different things. And so I think the reflection for people to have the opportunity to reflect or the ability to reflect is really key in that playbook. I think it, that section was called the impact. For me, I just summed it up. The impact has been huge of, you know, how alcohol has affected me from early on.
Thank you so much. And that's a wonderful segue into our deep dive into the playbook itself. And you've given us a glimpse into a couple pages of that. I would love to talk about the significance of this resource because it's where the rubber meets the road, right? It contains frameworks and starting with you, right? And you have to understand and get right with yourself and your own alcohol consumption before you can take that next step and work with a family member or community on theirs. And Amber, you alluded to this a lot in our conversation so far, but when we were developing the playbook, we were incredibly intentional about the language we chose. For our listeners, when you see the playbook, you'll notice that there's terms like lower risk instead of low risk and alcohol consumption instead of drinking. These might seem like small details, but they truly shape how the message is received. Amber, I know you truly believe that language matters. So why do these subtle differences in wording matter so much in prevention work? So what's the significance of shifting a word like drinking to alcohol consumption?
Yeah, I was afraid I was going to get kicked off the committee in the very beginning because I was so nitpicky. But it matters because it frames our reference. It frames our lens. And so if we take alcohol use and we just synonymously use the word drinking, then anytime I ask someone, what can I get you to drink? I then am almost inferring that it is an alcoholic beverage. You know, what would you like to drink? Unless I'm saying, you know, what would you like to use? You know, that doesn't make a lot of sense, right? So alcohol use is no different than any other substance use, medication use. And there's a prescriptive use for it to be lower risk. And so it was really important. It might look like just a changing of a couple words, but if we can get to it more understanding that alcohol is a drug, we often say drugs and alcohol or alcohol and other drugs, but alcohol is a drug. People do, if they use it at a high risk, do experience impairment, and there are then impairment related issues. And so words really do matter. If people are going to understand just all of the consequence, we got to be all on the same page in what words that we're using. So it is alcohol use. We do want it to be lower risk because there is no such thing as no risk when it comes to alcohol. So to tell someone that, you know, there's no risk, that's not true because it is a substance. And depending on where you are in your life and depending on your genetics and depending on what you're doing that day, the risk increases. So we need to be knowledgeable about that. And that's what the playbook can provide.
I think the playbook is really designed for a broad audience, right? Individuals, communities, professionals. Say, from your side of the coin, you have a unique perspective on both enforcement and education. How do you see professionals, you know, like law enforcement or even prevention professionals or educators making good use of the playbook?
So there's something in law enforcement referred to as community policing. And the way I would describe that is, you know, when you get in law enforcement, when you get actively involved in your community, in your groups, in your schools, and your churches, and whatever, to open a line of communication with those groups, you know, about healthy things and good things. So it really sheds law enforcement in a positive light where you're not just showing up when there's crisis or a problem, right? So now I'm building that communication and relationship with you, you know, just simply by being there and sharing things. And maybe those resources are something related to mental health, or for veterans, you know, related to mental health with, you know, crisis and post-traumatic and various things. So I think sharing the resources reference the playbook. And I say this because I think that oftentimes what Amber was referring to with language and using certain terms, you know, people often associate, you know, I've been drinking, or I'm an alcoholic, or using those kind of words. And I feel like that creates a stigma. And so people are less likely to talk about it openly. You know, I would rather say, you know, I consumed too much alcohol this week and, you know, I'm concerned about it, rather than saying, oh, I've been drinking all week, right? So I think talking, really separating what is to be able to dissect what that means so you understand where your risk is at, I think is very key, especially with the playbook.
Thank you. And Amber, when you think about the needs you see every day in the community you serve, what makes this playbook especially important? How do you see it benefiting the people in Hancock County?
Substance use, alcohol use, especially when something is legal. You know, Faye mentioned the stigma and breaking down, you know, people feeling comfortable to come out and speak. I think that there's just a lot of assumptions. And what I like about the playbook is it breaks down things that we can have influence over. It allows us to say, oh, I'm having a public get together. I'm having people over and I will be serving alcohol. So what are ways that, you know, I might be able to do that different? Just so that I can get the word out that, like, everyone's choices and whatever choice they make is going to be okay. If they choose not to have alcohol while they're at my get together, if they choose to have less, that's okay. How are ways that I can do that? And so where do we have influence, I think, and how many places do we maybe need to spotlight more prevention in? The playbook breaks down multiple different types of demographics that might benefit from getting this type of information. And again, it's outside the realm of the school. It's outside the realm of, like, go to the park and target the children. No, this is about adults and adult use. And I think that's what makes this book very helpful for my community, because it's going to allow us to talk about it in a more enlightened way.
And that kind of reminds me of how the playbook, I feel, moves towards a solution-focused conversation. So I was really grateful for how the work group did that. And one of the key frameworks in the Take Action chapter is this very simple but powerful tool, the 5 W's: who, what, when, where, and why. The framework's designed to support anyone, whether they're a professional or a concerned citizen, break down the issue and create an effective plan. And Amber, you gave an example of, I'm hosting a gathering, right? Who, what, when, where, why? Who's at risk? What challenges are they facing? When and where is it happening? And why is it important to address the issue? So building off of your kind of personal example, Amber, can you talk about how using the simple 5 W's framework can help any Ohioan tackle an alcohol-related issue in their neighborhood or community?
Yeah. I find that one of the difficult conversations I don't know that Hancock County is different than anywhere else, but the difficult conversations we have is about community gatherings, especially fundraisers and things like that, where there's going to be alcohol served and where community members strongly believe that you cannot raise money without alcohol being present. Well, if that is the case, okay, then did you do the 5 whys? Did you walk through the scenario to say, Well, 54% of Americans do, but that means that there's, you know, do the math. I don't do it on the fly very well. There's less than 54% than that don't. So are we breaking it down and making sure our event is really for everyone? Have we gone through, when are we going to serve it? How are we going to serve it? Where is the access points? Have we utilized individuals from, you know, education wise, from liquor control to make sure that we're following all the steps we should follow? I think it just makes you stop and just take a moment and really think about where there could be missteps along the way that we could preventatively avoid.
The prevention is key. And Faye, from your perspective, perhaps with the focus on enforcement or community outreach or policing, how do you see the 5 W's being a practical tool for a non-professional?
So I do believe early intervention is key. You know, I think, and although I do not specifically enforce, that's more the Ohio Investigative Unit. You know, they do have programs, we do as well. I think access online, resources to provide to different groups, various things, you know, especially universities, young adults, making that or providing that information or the resource easily for people, you know, to see and have access to, I think is going to be very key.
Thank you. And you've kind of guided us to our next topic, which is the heart of the playbook, which is implementation. The workgroup's goal in creating the playbook was to make it actionable and as adaptable as possible by giving users practical tools they can use at both an individual and a community level. Amber, let's start with you. What guidance or advice would you give to prevention professionals or coalitions who are looking to use this playbook effectively?
First off, let's all get some grant dollars and get it out there and get it into people's hands. I know the internet is a great way for people to get access to something anytime, anywhere. But you're out and you're about. I know we just had our Hancock County Fair, and people stopped by our table and they have their little 988 bag, and they were just putting, you know, everything from our table into their bag and actually sitting and talking with them and saying, this is what this is about. So getting it out to the community is going to be huge for people to actually utilize it. And I also think taking advantage of times like Alcohol Awareness Month to really highlight the playbook, using, if you're doing a minimize risk, maximize life training in your community, take the playbook with you so people can get copies of it and have it in their hands. Because like Faye mentioned, there's a worksheet in there, and really, you know, internet is great, but the tangible, where you can actually see your handwriting and write down some steps that you're concerned about. I think as a community, as a prevention coalition in my community, how can we make it as most accessible as possible so people have access to it?
Yeah, thank you. And I know, Faye, you already shared with us your favorite part of the book, but are there any other key features or chapters that you believe are especially important for our listeners to know about?
I'm going to echo what we said earlier about the language. I could not agree more. The language, I think, in identifying that is very important. I also love the fact that you show statistics in the playbook. And I think that's kind of a reality check for us. Like, I wasn't thinking that things are that high, or if I have this many, you know, consume this many, you know, drinks or per week, you know, am I considered low or medium or, you know, moderate, and so on. And I think kind of the visual of really looking at that is very eye-opening, very eye-opening.
Thank you. And I would love to continue this conversation, but it's getting that time where we need to land this plane. So before we wrap things up, it's time for our favorite part of the show. It's just a few rapid fire questions to close out our conversation. Tell us the first thing that comes to mind. No need to overthink. And Faye, we'll start to you. When it comes to addressing alcohol consumption, do you prefer community-wide campaigns or one-on-one conversations?
One-on-one conversations. I feel like you reach the heart of somebody when you're able to directly connect with them. I feel like that allows people to open their hearts to connect back with you. And when I'm vulnerable with people, I think they're more apt to be vulnerable with me and maybe share something they haven't talked about to anybody else.
Thank you. Amber, how about you?
If I got the money, there's a billboard going up somewhere, but I still prefer the one-on-one because I think those are the stories that stick with you and help you shape your next challenges that you want to work on. At least for me in the community, it's hearing the stories of individuals that make me go back and say, okay, we've got a gap here. We're missing here because this person shared with me this information. And I think when someone is heard, that and we say to them, like, these things are possible, that it gives them more hope to be able to try to take on new challenges themselves. And so it's going to be the one-on-one, but I will put up a billboard. You won't stop me.
Thank you so much. And Amber, if you could only use one tool to promote lower risk alcohol consumption, would it be social media or an in-person workshop?
I'm an education trainer, so it's going to be in person. You can feel the room. You can see where things are landing and where things aren't. And it gives you a great, you know, just it gives you a taste of what the general public is thinking about the material. And that's so important because it's got to be shaped. We can take all the evidence-based and research-based information, but it's got to be adaptable to be able to, like, reach individual communities. And so it's going to be in person for me.
Faye, how about you? Social media or in-person workshop?
So as much as I would love the in-person, although, you know, I would not be the person teaching that, because of that, I think the social media reaches a very broad audience. And so maybe my consumption habits are something that's been on my mind or my heart or whatever for, you know, weeks, months, however, you know, long, or maybe it's a topic that's never been discussed. And then I see something on social media, you know, that makes me want to dig in more. Like, hey, wait a second, this has caught my attention. I want to take a look at this. And so then I also think it reaches such a broad audience that maybe it's not something that affects me personally, but I know somebody I just had a conversation with and I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to forward this on to them, right? And so I think that social media is double-edged sword, but a lovely thing when it comes to trying to spread the word.
Thank you. And then we have one final question that we ask all of our guests, no matter what the topic is. You are reaching into that bowl of candy. Are you searching for a plain or peanut M&M? Say, how about you?
Peanut all the way.
Amber, how about you?
I'm going to dig really deep till I find an almond one.
Ah, there you go. Thank you, Amber and Faye, for sharing your time, expertise, and experience with us. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating, sharing it with others, posting about it on social media, or setting the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. Doing so helps us reach more listeners and keeps the conversation going. To catch all the latest from the Center, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook at OH Prevention COE, or visit us at preventioncoe.ohio.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter. If you missed our last podcast, it was with Jesse Wingert, Program Coordinator at the Summit County Public Health, and Alicia Curry, Operations Manager of the Cincinnati Drug and Poison Information Center. In this discussion, they recognize the need to address youth vaping, discuss the purpose and value of preventing youth vaping, an educational playbook for Ohio, and identified practical strategies for implementing the playbook across different settings. This podcast was produced by Ivory Lloyd at Global Insight Productions and is supported by Zeyu Zhang at the Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion with Jen Morell and Cody Englander. Thank you all for your work to get positive prevention content out into the world. As we close the podcast today, I need to share with our listeners that after 3 incredible seasons of insightful conversations, the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion will be concluding its podcast, Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. We are so grateful to our listeners, our amazing guests, and the dedicated staff who made this show possible. All of our episodes will be archived and available for you to listen to on YouTube and wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you for your support and for helping us translate science into real-world practice.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention podcast. For more episodes, you can visit us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. For more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.